Well, now in 1982, comedian Woody Allen began a relationship with actress Mia Farrow. You've heard of both of them, no doubt. Now, Farrow had three adopted children at that time. 9 years later, Allen actually formally adopted the younger two children because he'd been quite instrumental in raising them throughout their teenage years. He didn't adopt the oldest child, though, Soon Yi, because she was 20 by that stage, but he'd still helped raise her. A year later, it came out that Allen was having an affair with Soon Yi. Farrow broke up with Allen, and Soon Yi then moved in with Woody Allen. When he was questioned over the appropriateness of having a sexual relationship with a woman that he'd actually helped raise from age 10, Allen is reported as saying, "Well, the heart wants what the heart wants." That was his excuse. The heart wants what the heart wants. Now, while the Bible tells us to call out that kind of behavior, I hope you know we're allowed, we're told to judge sin. We're told to say, "Hey, that's actually wrong. That's actually going against God." What we can't do is judge Woody Allen. We're not to judge people. And the reason we can't judge Woody Allen is because, well, in the end, we're guilty of the exact same thing. Now, what I mean by that, I don't mean that we're having sexual relationships with adopted children we've raised. What I mean is, when we do something we know is wrong, we come up with reasons to excuse our behaviour. It's actually part of human nature. What I mean is this: human nature since the fall is that everyone sins, okay? We all sin. And one of our most prevalent sins is pride. Everyone's heart has pride in it. Now, the thing about pride is its function in life is to make us look good. And depending on the person, pride will cause them to do things like lie or cheat or steal or even in some cases to kill in order to hide the bad stuff in our life so that we can, well, look good. Pride's favourite tool, though, is coming up with reasons to excuse our behaviour, excuse our sin, mainly so that we can keep doing what we're doing. We'll excuse it to ourselves, we'll excuse it to others, so that we can continue in our sin. And as our passage today shows, even the great heroes of faith do this. Even the great heroes of faith come up with excuses. So what we want to do today, what I want to do today is look at some of the common excuses that Christians often turn to excuse our sin. We see most of them, many of them, in our passage today. But what we really want to do is we want to then look at how we can hopefully combat this behaviour. Right? Exodus 3 and 4 is teaching us how we can hopefully stop excusing our bad behaviour and in particular our sin, our disobedience. So let's dive straight in. So we picked up the story, the narrative, smack bang in the middle of the burning bush episode. This is when God appeared to Moses in a bush that, though it was on fire, it wasn't burning up. Right? It's a miraculous bush here. And we saw last week in verse 10, God says to Moses, "So now go, I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." Now, here's the thing. When God gives us a direct command via a burning bush that doesn't burn up, the correct response is, "As you wish, Lord." Right? I will do whatever you tell me. So verse 10 should have been the end of the conversation there. But it wasn't. We read in verse 11. "But Moses said to God, 'Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?'" Now, there is a certain level of humility in this response. We saw that last week. But you see, the thing is, Moses is still questioning God here. He's questioning God's judgment. He's saying to God, "Are you sure you've got the right Moses here, Lord?" One of the most common excuses for not following God's commands is questioning God's judgment. People will say things like, "Oh, look, God's just trying to take our fun away by that command." Or, "God's got to keep up with the times. We've moved on since those ancient commands." Or simply, "God's just got it wrong on this one." And that's what Moses is doing here. He's starting off his excuse train with saying, "Are you sure you've got the right Moses, Lord?" Well, what we notice is God very graciously answers Moses' questions, his hesitations, by saying in verse 12, "Don't worry, I'll be with you. I'll be with you." Now, so what God is saying is, it doesn't actually matter who you are, Moses. What matters is that I'll be with you. And the reason that that's all that matters is that I'm with you is because what we need to understand is in life, God is not just our coach in life, all right? He's also the referee. And the wonderful thing about God is he is an unashamedly biased referee who will blow the whistle in life to make sure that the game goes our way. And that's what God is doing here. He's saying, you don't need to worry, I'm with you. I'm your coach and your referee. So verse 12 should have been the end of the conversation. But it wasn't. Moses has another hesitation, this time about who God is. Right? So you've just told me, God, that this mission is all about whether you're with me or not. Well, who then are you? This excuse sounds a little different these days. People will come up with slightly different ways to word this kind of excuse. They'll say things like, well, who is God to tell me what to do? Or how about this one? Listen, God, I know you're there, but you stay out of my way and I'll stay out of yours. And again, God deals very graciously with Moses. Who are you? Well, he says in verse 14, this very famous passage, God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you're to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. Now, if you're a little confused by this answer, don't need to worry. I'm pretty sure Moses was as well. This is a confusing answer. What he's doing here is he's giving him, God's giving Moses his name, but this name, it's a verb. It's really weird. It's a verb. It's like calling your kid something like skipping or counting. Can you imagine saying to your kid, come and sit up for dinner, counting? Like, it doesn't really make much sense. But even more than that, it's the verb to be. We believe it's pronounced Yahweh. We don't know if that's exactly how it's pronounced back then, but that's our best guess. We can't be sure. But its literal meaning is being. So the English translations, very, you know, I think quite accurately, translated as I am, simply because it means I exist, I am here. What God is saying is you cannot escape me. You cannot hide from me. You cannot run from me. You cannot tell me to butt out because, well, I simply am. There is no part or pocket of reality where I am not. I am who I am. So after Yahweh tells Moses who he is, he gives Moses sort of a detailed itinerary of his plan in verses 18 to 22. And I've got to be honest, in Moses' defense here, this is a ludicrous-sounding plan. I don't know if you picked it up when it was read for us, all right? So number one, God wants to send one bloke, a single bloke, who's actually an outcast as it is. He wants to send this one bloke to the most powerful ruler on the planet at that time and say to the most powerful ruler on the planet, I want you to release your entire slave labor force. All right, that's verse 18. Sounds ludicrous enough as it is, but then God says the goal of this plan is that it will fail. Verse 19, Pharaoh will refuse your command. But then after that, Moses, I want you to perform wonders before Pharaoh. Verse 20. Now, you need to understand this. Miracles had not happened yet in history up until this point. Moses would be the very first person in human history to perform miracles. The closest anyone had come was translating some dreams that Joseph did for Pharaoh many years ago. And then when Pharaoh finally agrees to let the people go, the Israelites are to ask their Egyptian neighbors for jewelry and clothing, verses 21 and 22, and for some reason they will say yes and hand over all their valuables. Now, if you're in Moses' shoes, right, though he wasn't wearing shoes at this stage, but if you were, would you not be skeptical about this plan? But here's the thing. This is not Baldrick coming up with a cunning plan to save Blackadder here. All right? This is the God of the universe. This is the great I am speaking. And when Yahweh says he will do something, it is as good as done. And so verse 14, I am who I am, should have been the end of the conversation. But it wasn't. In chapter 4, Moses starts coming up with excuses as to why he shouldn't go. Verse 1, Moses answered, but what if they don't believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? This excuse is known as peer pressure. All right, what if the crowd doesn't like what I'm doing? What if they don't listen to what I'm saying? Well, to this, the Lord very graciously again provides Moses with a way out, and he gives him three signs this time, signs that will prove that Yahweh has actually sent Moses. The first is to take his staff, verses 2 to 5, throw it down, it'll turn into a snake, and then he'll pick it up again and it'll turn back into a staff. The second, put your hand inside your cloak, and it'll turn leprous, and then put it back again, verses 6 to 7. And then the third is to pour out water on the ground and it will become blood. Verses 8 and 9. And here's the thing, right? God allowed Moses to perform two of those miracles then and there. Moses just did the most amazing, miraculous thing that any human being had ever done on the planet up until that point. That should have been the end of the conversation. But it wasn't. Moses' final excuse comes in verse 10. Then Moses said to the Lord, "Pardon your servant, Lord, but I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue." Right, I know God has told me to preach the word, but I'm just no good at it, so I'll leave it for the experts. To which God very graciously says, "I'll help you speak, all right? If I created the human mouth, then I can help the human to use it." So do you think verse 10 was the end of the conversation? No, Moses still isn't finished. When all his excuses have graciously been dealt with, Moses then just comes out and says in verse 13, "Pardon your servant, Lord, but please, oh please, just send someone else." What he's basically saying is, "I don't want to obey." Now, it's at this point that God's patience runs out. Verse 14, "Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses." And this brings us to the heart of the passage, okay? Why is God angry here? It's because God has asked Moses to do something. He's given Moses a specific command, and Moses has come up with excuse after excuse after excuse as to why I don't have to obey. And here's the thing. When you come up with reasons as to why you don't have to obey God, the next step is not obeying God. All right? "You surely will not die. For when you eat of it, your eyes will be open and you will be like God." And what is the very next thing that Eve did? She ate of it. All right? And this is what Moses is doing here. He's coming up with excuses, just like Satan did for Eve, as to why he doesn't have to obey God, so that he won't have to obey God. Now, before we turn the spotlight on ourselves, we just want to look quickly at what God thinks of this kind of disobedience. This was the other section, verses 24 to 26, that Val read for us. So in verse 18, Moses heads back to Egypt, all right? He's on his way. And in verse 24, we get this incredible, incredible verse. Have a read of it. It's one of the most amazing verses in the Bible. "At a lodging place on the way, the Lord met Moses and was about to kill him." Say what now? "At a lodging place on the way, the Lord met Moses and was about to kill him. But Zipporah took a flint knife, cut off her son's foreskin and touched Moses' feet with it. 'Surely you are a bridegroom of blood to me,' she said. So the Lord let him alone." Now here's the million-dollar question. Why, oh why, would God spend 80 years raising up Moses and then appear to him in a miraculous burning bush that doesn't burn up, and then give Moses extraordinary powers to perform miracles, and then send Moses back to Egypt, which he's on his way to do, and then decide to kill Moses before he even gets a chance to do it? What is going on here? The reason God is about to kill Moses is because Moses has disobeyed one of God's commands. Right, in Genesis 17, in Genesis 17, verses 12 to 14, we read this. This is God speaking to Abraham. He says, "For the generations to come, every male among you who is 8 days old must be circumcised. Any uncircumcised male who has not been circumcised in the flesh will be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant." The reason God was about to kill Moses is because he had not circumcised his son, as God had commanded all Israelite parents to do. Now, Moses knew about this command. He was circumcised himself by his mother, and he knew about this command for his kids, seen by how quickly he and Zipporah jump into action here. But what this episode shows us is how seriously God takes disobedience. Right, if God tells us to do something and we refuse, do not expect God to be happy. Now, I'm not saying that God is going to smite any Christian who sins on the spot. Right? We know that's not the case. We know he could do it, as we see from this passage. Right? He was about to kill Moses. But what the main point of these little two verses is telling us is how much God hates disobedience. What this means is there is no excuse for going against God's commands. None. Right? The take-home message here is do not come up with excuses as to why we shouldn't or don't have to follow God's commands. Right? Moses tried 5 different excuses and God rejected them all. Right? There is no valid excuse for going against God's word. Our problem is making excuses is our modus operandi. That's how we operate. Right? What the heart wants, the will pursues, and the mind justifies. I'll say it again. What the heart wants, the will pursues, and the mind justifies. And that's what Moses is doing here. He's trying to justify not having to go to Egypt because his heart doesn't want to go to Egypt. The problem for us is that the human heart always wants sin. And so our mind is always coming up with excuses to justify that sin. All right? Our heart wants to be able to afford those little creature comforts in life. And so our mind will go into excuse mode. All right? We're at the self-serve checkout at Coles or Woolies and we've got some mangoes. Well, we'll just put them through as carrots to save a few dollars. Or we'll excuse downloading music or TV shows illegally by saying, well, it's a victimless crime anyway, so I can keep a few more dollars for myself. Our heart wants the financial security of having at least $20,000 in the bank for a rainy day. So our mind will excuse our greed. It'll say things like, well, God doesn't need my money. Or he certainly doesn't need the whole 10% of my wages. And as for the government, I'm going to cheat on my tax return because they're going to misuse my tax dollars anyway. Our heart wants the power that comes from gossiping about someone. And so our mind will excuse it by saying, well, look, she deserves it anyway. I mean, look at her. She's always using her looks to get her way in life. So I'll gossip about her. Our heart wants the comfort that comes from those titillating images on our computer or on late night SBS. And so our mind will excuse it by saying, well, it's been a hard week and my wife isn't in the mood anyway, and so I deserve this. We are experts in making excuses, and we would do the exact same thing Moses did if we were in his shoes. So what do we do? How do we combat this habit of excusing our behavior? Well, friends, we look to the one person who did not do what Moses did. We look to Jesus. See, God's command to Jesus was not go rescue my people and I will be with you. It was go rescue my people and I will forsake you. But on top of that, God said, I will set you on fire, Jesus, but unlike the burning bush, you will burn up. God said to Jesus, obey me and I will burn you to a cinder. Now here's the question, right? We look at this every week. How is it that looking to Jesus being metaphorically burnt to a cinder on the cross, how does that help us stop making excuses? What's the connection there of looking to Jesus? The connection is the reason why Jesus did it. Right? Why did Jesus do that? To explain, I want to use an illustration I heard at men's convention last week. Johnny Gibson gave this illustration. I think it's a great illustration, so I've stolen it. Changing it a little bit, adapting it a little bit. So the speaker, Johnny Gibson, was talking about when he was watching the Victorian bushfires in Feb 09. And he was looking at the news reports and he saw this one report of a guy telling his ordeal, right? And the guy said, look, I was up on my roof. I was hosing down my house, hoping to save it. But when I saw the flames come over the hill, I knew all my actions were futile. There was no way we were saving the house or ourselves. So I grabbed my wife, we jumped in the car and sped off. But the flames were too fierce and too fast, and I knew they were going to overtake us. Fortunately, I saw a paddock that had been burnt out already. And so I drove onto that paddock, stood in the middle, like parked in the middle of the paddock. And even though the flames were roaring, like there was enormous noise, incredible heat, they were sweating profusely, they survived. The reason being, they found a paddock that had already been burnt out. The reason Jesus was willingly burnt to a cinder is because he knew that you and I would be coming along one day and we would need rescuing from the flames of God's wrath. And he knew the only way we could be rescued from those flames is if we stood in the place that had already been burnt out. See, Jesus obeyed God's commands for us. And when we realize this little fact, when this becomes real to our hearts start to want sin less. The reason being, why would you pursue the inferior satisfaction that sin offers when you have the infinite satisfaction that Jesus offers? It's just foolishness. Right? When the message of the cross sets our hearts on fire, we realize that God's love holds infinitely more comfort than porn or than a few more dollars to buy a coffee each day. We realize that God's love holds infinitely more acceptance than having the right look for our friends to love us. We realize that God's love holds infinitely more security than money in the bank. And we realize that God's love holds infinitely more power than gossiping about that girl. See, when our heart starts wanting God rather than sin, well, we don't need to come up with excuses anymore, do we? So friends, look to Moses as what not to do. Right? Do not come up with excuses for disobeying God's commands. Instead, look to Jesus, who willingly obeyed the most crazy of God's commands. Save my people and I will forsake you. Right? For when we see Jesus obeying for us, it makes us want to joyfully obey him. May we be people who love Jesus with a deep love so that excuses for sin are no longer even needed. We're going to have a reflection.